Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest and You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, and this is The Exchange. Journalists have been called the enemy of the people. The president of the United States has called journalists the most dishonest human beings on earth. And last week, a man with a shotgun busted into the newsroom of the Capital Gazette in Annapolis, Maryland, with a shotgun and killed five people. This is the climate under which journalists here in New Hampshire and across the country do their jobs. Journalists do lots of unglamorous, difficult work. They show up at city council and school board meetings. They write stories about race, the economy, and politics. Journalists do their best to look at the data, uncover trends, and articulate why it matters to you and your community. And they do it because they believe in the value of journalism to our democracy. Today on The Exchange, in lieu of the weekly news roundup, a conversation with journalists about the profession and the way it's practiced here in the Granite State. You can call into The Exchange with your questions, 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send an email to exchange@nhpr.org or post on our Facebook page at NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. And we're also live streaming a video of this radio show. You can check out the stream at our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. So here to talk about journalism, the way it's practiced here in New Hampshire, are several people who know how it's done. Meg Heckman, former Concord Monitor reporter and now an assistant professor of journalism at Northeastern University. NHPR's Brita Green, who covers the Upper Valley and Monadnock region. Jason Schreiber, union leader correspondent. And with us for part of the program today is Hadley Barndollar of Seacoast Online. Thank you, everybody, for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Peter. You're
happy to be here.
Great. Again, listeners, the phone number for you to call to join the conversation, 1-800-892-6477. And to start the conversation, I wanted to ask everybody here, what got you interested in journalism? Maybe start with you, Brita. What made you want to become a journalist?
I can think back to my glory days of high school, just first seeing, working on the high school paper, first seeing sort of the influence that you were able to have in terms of getting to the bottom of things that people were talking about, like gossip in the cafeteria, and then being able to say, yeah, what is going on? Like, why do the bagels taste so bad all of a sudden? The issues that people care about, and then really being able to sort of inform that discussion, take it to another area, and potentially even influence policy in that direction.
Yeah. Okay. How about you, Meg?
Yeah. I got into journalism by accident, which is a far more common answer than I think a lot of people realize. I had like seven majors in college before I wandered into a journalism class at the University of New Hampshire a really long time ago. And I touched it and I all of a sudden knew what I was supposed to be doing. And I think what drew me to it was the power of high quality information conveyed in a way that is accessible and meaningful and kind of hits you in your emotional and intellectual center. And at the beginning of my career, I realized that I truly believe, and I still believe this now, human beings are essentially good. And when they have high quality information at their disposal, I really believe that they will make the decisions that are good for society as a whole.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Jason?
Well, I thought I wanted to be a chef, and then while I was in high school, and then decided that I was always interested in journalism and hearing people's stories, and decided that everyone has a story to tell, and you know, I wanted to be part of that. Journalism is such a powerful thing, and the stories you write can really make a difference. And and I wanted to be part of that, and decided that it was the route I wanted to take. And it's been a great run.
Cool. And Hadley?
Well, I was always a big storyteller as a kid. I was naturally a writer, and this is actually going to sound really funny, but as an adolescent, I was like uber aware of issues like race and poverty. I'm not quite sure why. But I grew up outside of Boston, and I would actually ask my parents to, like, drive me through the tough neighborhoods, when we'd be at the Prue or at a Red Sox game, because I just had this general interest in how neighborhoods worked, and especially neighborhoods that, you know, were different from mine, and just kind of the everyday ebb and flow of life in these communities. But I think what really kind of kicked off, you know, I'm doing journalism for a career, was getting involved with the student newspaper at UNH. That's when I started to get my hands dirty, and I knew that this was what I wanted to pursue.
Mm-hmm. And how has the job lived up to your expectations, Hadley?
I don't think I had any expectations going in, to be honest. I didn't really know what to expect. But here I am, you know, a little over 2 years into the job now, and every day is different. Sometimes have been incredibly hard, you know, other times have been incredibly illuminating and exciting and, you know, sparking a belief in humanity. Like I said, just every day is different.
Mm-hmm. And I'll ask that of the panelists here in the studio with me, because that's something I've heard before, too, is that you come to work and you almost don't know what you're going to be, in essence, studying that day. I'm getting a lot of nods around the table. Brita, yeah, is that your experience?
Sure, yeah, that's sort of the definition of the job, is covering the news. And if we could predict the news, then we'd be in a different world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely waking up every day and trying to get a sense of what's going on, what's happened overnight, and what people are talking about.
You know, that was something I actually worried I would really miss when I switched from being in a newsroom full time to teaching journalism and studying journalism. And the really cool thing is that I still don't know what kind of information I'm going to interact with on a day-to-day basis. And I get to see stories through the eyes of my students. And that is equally cool. And equally interesting, and sometimes just as stressful.
Just as stressful, yeah. Jason, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, every day is different. And, you know, I've talked to people about their jobs, you know, interviewed them, and they'll say, oh, you know, I'll ask, why do you like your job? And, oh, it's every day is different. But it really is different as a journalist. I mean, you never know what you're going to do. I mean, I wake up in the morning and think I'm going to cover, you know, one thing, and then the next thing I know, I'm covering a massive power outage from a squirrel, or, you know, then I'm at an important meeting on water contamination. I mean, you just never know, and it's exciting, but, you know, it can be tough, too. But I think you have to be flexible, and anyone who's interested in this profession, they have to go into it knowing that you just have to be ready to, you know, switch gears, you know, in an instant, because you just never know.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, if you have questions for our panel of journalists, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, or you can email us, exchange@nhpr.org. One of the things we hear about sort of anecdotally talking about journalism generally is that the hours are so long. Is that true? Are they super, super long for you? We'll start with you, Jason.
I don't really have set hours. Mm-hmm. So I could be out at a fire at 6 in the morning and then covering something else at, you know, 8 o'clock at night. I mean, it just depends on when the news is, when the news happens. At least for me. I mean, I don't have a shift. I'm just out there when there's news.
And Meg, back in the day when you were a reporter, was it crazy hours?
Yeah, it was. But most of my time as a reporter was before the advent of social media. By the time Facebook and Twitter came along, I had shifted into kind of a digital editor's role. So that was long, but a little more predictable in terms of a schedule. But yeah, I definitely remember, you know, staying up until midnight to file a story from city council and then getting up the next morning at 6 or 7 to go and, you know, meet somebody who wanted to be president. And I was like 25 and it was great. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Hadley, how are the hours?
So we, you know, here at the Portsmouth Herald, we do work out of our newsroom. So the hours are really long. I gotta be honest, you know, sometimes I get in at 8:30 in the morning and I work straight through until, you know, 10 o'clock and I get out of a meeting that night. I'm covering a little bit of Southern Maine now, and we just had, our election last month, and I was waiting for results until 1:30 in the morning and I didn't even get them.
Wow.
So, that's just an example, you know, it depends on the shift. And like Jason said, you know, when duty calls, but kind of go in and have to be flexible and just be ready for what's going to come across your plate that day.
Mm-hmm. Brita?
Yeah, I'll just echo what everyone else said. I mean, it really is whatever's happening that day. You can have an early morning, a late night.
Yeah.
Just roll with it.
Jason? I was just going to say, I mean, I can give an example. Back in 2012, when the Greenland police shooting happened, I was up early in the morning, 7 a.m., covering the vice president was in New Hampshire, covered him all day long, finished my stories at about six at night, and then the Greenland police shooting happened, where the police chief was shot and killed, four other officers were wounded, and then I was one of the first reporters at the scene there, and then I was there until about 3 in the morning, dealing with that awful situation, and went home, got a couple hours of sleep, back at it, so that was a very long day, but that's just, again, you just never know.
Yeah. Listeners, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We got this question from a listener before the show started. What's your greatest challenge as a journalist? How do you address readers on social media and elsewhere who disagree with your coverage? And is that an issue? Meg, you mentioned social media and how it's changed. So what do you think? How did you address readers on social media?
I think it's changed a lot since Facebook and Twitter and other forms of social media really first debuted. And I try, if people are interacting with me in a professional, fairly respectful way, I will interact with them. I'll do my best to answer their questions. One of my jobs used to be moderating online comments when I was a digital editor, and that was a really mixed bag of feedback that you'd get on stories. And I think if they were trying to actually ask questions about how things worked or our coverage decisions, try and give calm, fact-based answers, provide links to additional content. But what's gotten more challenging lately is personal, often gendered attacks on me as a person. And when that happens, you really just have to use all of the blocking tools that are at your disposal and cut off conversation. And I've definitely noticed in the last year or so, the attacks have gotten a lot more serious, a lot more gendered. And it's really made me pull back from social media. And it's had a real chilling effect, I think, and not just on me. I've heard this from a lot of journalists and a lot of academics.
Mm-hmm. Hadley, would you like to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I would like to piggyback off of that. I think that constructive, respectful exchange and dialogue with a journalist goes a long way. Send them an email letting them know that you appreciate their work, but maybe you didn't fully agree with how a recent story was written or presented. I mean, I can tell you that the wide majority of journalists would greatly appreciate that and will work with readers to make their coverage more fair and balanced and include more perspectives. I mean, after all, we're not writing for ourselves. We're writing for our readers, for the public, you know, the general community. But, you know, in my day-to-day, I kind of have this policy where if I get an email that is constructive, I will absolutely respond and engage in dialogue with that reader. However, you know, if it crosses a certain line where I don't necessarily feel comfortable engaging, or, you know, there's some kind of name calling or threats, it's just not necessarily beneficial to send a response back in that instance. Mm-hmm. And I think it's unfortunate that, you know, with today's presidential administration, there is kind of this gap now felt between the general public and community journalists. So I think that people get behind a screen and they kind of use that gap and put their thoughts not necessarily in the most appropriate and professional manner.
Well, let me ask Jason Schreiber about that, because Jason, you've been practicing journalism since the 90s, pre-Trump, of course, but also pre-dominance of social media and the internet. We'd like to say, perhaps, that the current administration has changed things significantly. But over the long run, 20 plus years, is this super new, or has this been a slow trend of I guess, the growing discrediting of journalists?
I haven't really seen a change in that, at least from what I do, what they were just talking about with the social media part of it. I mean, I haven't faced personal attacks, and if I have, I would address it appropriately, but I haven't really noticed. Obviously, we were talking before the show about the fake news issue that's out there and trying to combat that. And that has made it a little challenging when you're on the streets and you're hearing, people joking about fake news, and we're out there trying to do our job. And I think most reporters, 99% of community journalists are out there without an agenda and are simply just trying to report what they see in their community and do it respectfully.
And Meg, you were nodding your head to what Jason was saying.
Yeah, I think my biggest frustration about our current media climate is the conflation of media with journalism. And journalism is certainly a type of media. Not all media is journalism. And I will often say that comparing what people at places like NHPR or the Concord Monitor or the Union Leader or any of the other great local news organizations in the state do to what you see on cable TV is like comparing, I don't know, Concord Hospital to the Dr. Oz show. I mean, they're just two completely different things, different motivations, different missions. And I think if we start to separate those two things, that might help us have a more meaningful conversation about the importance of local journalism.
Mm-hmm. Hadley, I wanted to ask you something about covering difficult subjects, because you were covering, I believe, difficult subjects at Phillips Exeter Academy. I believe we've spoken about it on this program before, have we not?
Yes, we have, a couple times, actually.
Yeah, it's been a difficult subject to talk about, sexual abuse or allegations of sexual abuse. How do you go about approaching something so sensitive like that?
Well, that was an interesting experience, because I was actually thrown into that as my first job as a professional journalist.
Wow.
So I got my feet wet very quickly. They are a multi-billion dollar, endowment institution that has an international reach. And they, for many, many, many decades, had a systemic issue of sexual abuse. And that was a big thing to run into, right out of college. But one thing that I thought was very interesting was, being the local journalist, I was being contacted, by people from all over the globe, saying, we're counting on you to shed light on our pain. And that was a really big responsibility. I took it very, very seriously. I'm no longer covering Phillips Exeter anymore. But I'm very proud of the coverage that, here at the Portsmouth Herald, we did do during my time in Exeter. I think, some things got in motion. Obviously, a lot of things were exposed. One of the perpetrators was actually persecuted and found guilty. But I think that what was most striking to me was that the relationship that I did develop with some of these victims, and they still reach out to me, on Facebook today, just, keeping me up to date on some of the things that are happening. But I think more than anything, it's about having empathy and understanding, but also conveying to them that, you are serious about reporting this as best as you can, and that we're allies, the reporter and the source, we are allies, in something like that, working together to make the best story that we can. So that was a learning experience.
Yeah, it sounds like it. But your reporting has been stellar on this. It's why we've had you on, because it's just
Thank
so important
so
for the community. But let me ask you one more question before we let you go, Hadley, which
yep.
is, what do you wish people knew about the news before sitting down to read one of your stories or a story by anybody else? What do you wish people knew about how to read a news story?
All right.
Shall we settle in, get the popcorn?
I could go in so many different directions with that.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'll take a two-pronged approach. I mean, from just kind of a motif standpoint, Jason alluded to this, 99% of your local community journalists, and I posted about this on Twitter the other day, have no agenda or ulterior motives, and are simply trying to, make a modest living documenting life as it is now. We do our jobs to tell illuminating stories and shed light on the human condition, collect a variety of perspectives that ultimately allow readers to make choices about their lives in ways that are the most educated and, you know, best for them as individuals and collectively as a society. So just talking about motive, you know, that's the motive, if there is any motive, is setting up, you know, an equal fair playing ground for everybody to make their own decisions. But as far as reading a news story, one thing that I've come across lately is people are taking the quotes that I put in there from other people and construing them as my agenda. And this is the first time that I came across something like that, actually, in the last couple of weeks.
Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, sure. So I'll actually give a kind of a funny example. This week I covered in Portsmouth a reading of a very famous Frederick Douglass speech from the 1850s, where he addressed how the 4th of July, you know, at that time meant nothing to slaves because they were not free. And I actually got an email, someone accusing me of making the 4th of July racist. And I was quoting, you know, one of America's most famous orators, you know, of the 1800s. So just, you know, taking things out of context like that, that's something that I have come across actually within the last couple months that is kind of a first for me.
Well, Hadley Barndollar of the Seacoast Online, thank you very much for speaking with us this morning.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
We're speaking with a panel of journalists today about the way news is gathered in the Granite State. We're speaking with Jason Schreiber of the Union Leader, NHPR's Brita Green, and Meg Heckman, formerly of the Concord Monitor and now a journalism professor at Northeastern University. We'll talk more about what our panelists wish people knew about the news before they sat down to read a story right after the break. And if you'd like to call in with a question or comment, the number is 1-800-892-6477. You can also email exchange@nhpr.org or post on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. I'm Peter Biello. Stay close.
Filling up the tank ain't what it used to be. Gone are the days when you were met with a smile and gasoline cost pennies. Times have certainly changed, and while we can't send you back in time, we can help you fill your tank for next to nothing. Just be one of the early bird winners of NHPR's Summer Car Raffle, and you could drive off with $2,000 in gas gift cards to any station of your choice. Tickets are just $50 or get 6 for $150 at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and we're talking about how the news is made in the Granite State with a few folks who write it. Here with me in the studio are NHPR's Brita Green, who covers the Upper Valley and Monadnock region for NHPR, Jason Schreiber, Union Leader reporter, and Meg Heckman, former Concord Monitor reporter and now an assistant professor of journalism at Northeastern University. Listeners, give us a call if you have questions or comments about the week's news. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Perhaps you have a question or a comment about when you interacted with a journalist. When have you interacted with a journalist, perhaps going beyond simply what you've read? If you've talked with a journalist before, either on the record or off the record, what do you think about that experience? Let us know. The number again, 1-800-892-6477. Also joining us for this part of the show is Barbara Tatro of the Berlin Daily Sun. Barbara, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And Barbara, we'll talk with you a little bit in a moment about covering rural areas, because that presents different challenges than, say, covering an urban area like Manchester or Portsmouth. But I want to ask you, since we were just talking about before the break, what journalists, what you might have wished people knew about journalism or before sitting down to read a story. What do you think?
Well, I guess I'd like readers to know that we work really hard to get the story to them, to get it to them correct. We're always open for phone calls if they want to tell us something that we've gotten wrong, if they want to give us tips. I have a listed phone number at my house. They can call me anytime. Well, there's a phone number at the office. I have email. We try very hard to cover events, to get to events. It's very hard in this economy. So we're open to any help they want to give us. And we try always to treat people with respect, to listen to what they have to say, to take criticism seriously. I mean, they are the readers. They are the people that we're trying to work for. And we love our readers. I mean, they're very loyal. and they're generally not shy.
And, well, Barbara's phone lines are open. Don't be shy. I wanted to get Jason and Meg to respond to that question, too, before we proceed. Meg, what do you think? What do you wish readers knew before reading a story?
I think I want to echo a lot of what other people have said so far, is that your average local newsroom, or even your average metro newsroom, is not part of some vast conspiracy against your personal political point of view. It for the most part, newsrooms strive to be as independent as possible and strive to be as accurate as possible. That doesn't mean we always get it right. That doesn't mean that we don't have some professional norms that were and are problematic that we should be talking about. But in general, a reporter who goes out to do a story is in search of the truth as close to as much as what he or she can get. So I think that's what I'd say.
Mm-hmm. And Jason?
I think people don't realize the amount of work that does go into getting a story, and they don't realize that we're juggling many stories at once, and that can be challenging. But I really want to stress, I want people to realize that we do have a heart, and we face a lot of criticism, but just personally for me, I feel like I have a heart. I have covered some very difficult stories over the years, and one I just wanted to talk about real quick. Several years ago, there was a family in Brentwood. Their two young children were only four and five, and they were going to a sleepover. Some of you may have heard about this story. They were going to a sleepover at their aunt's house in Mass. She came to pick them up. They were on their way to Mass. She pulled over on the side of 495 in Lowell and stripped their clothes off and walked them into traffic, and all three of them were killed. And I remember showing up at the family's house a couple of days later to knock at the door, see if they would talk. Of course, they wouldn't talk. And then I got the courage up to call a few days later and left a message and said, if you ever want to talk, I'd love to share your story. And 6 months later, they called and they wanted to talk to me. And they were forming a mental health organization. They wanted to share their story for the first time. And that family, I mean, that was a very difficult. I'm a father. I've got two kids. And that was a very difficult interview. But it was important for them to share their story. I was glad to be able to tell their story. And we developed a pretty close relationship. I mean, I wrote about them for years. And I would see them in the town at the 5K, at the, just different events. And, they're, as a local journalist, you face the people you write about every day. It's not like we're national reporters who come in and then we're gone in a day or two. We still have to deal with these people and face them. And so we're held to a different standard, and we really have to take the job seriously. But
and you take it home. It sounds like you're saying you take this home.
You do. I mean, I set my feelings aside, do the job, but I have my time when I process, when I'm alone. And when you're busy and caught up covering the story, you're not really processing it at that time. But then later on, when you're off deadline, you have a minute to reflect on what just happened. It can hit you. I remember interviewing families of New Hampshire victims of 9/11, and that was really difficult. And the two police shootings I covered, Greenland, Brentwood police shootings. I mean, you're part of the community, and it can be really tough. And I don't think people realize the impact that it has on the local reporter.
Brita, you're nodding, so it seems like you relate to this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think one thing I would love people to know is I would love to hear from them after I've talked to them and a story has aired. I think a lot of times, especially on sensitive stories, like the night before it airs, I'm lying in bed thinking like, oh my gosh, I hope that I was true. You know, the way that I presented their story was the way that they identify with their story. I'm thinking of a recent story that we did on a young boy at Hanover High School who had written an op-ed about his stance on guns that had been very controversial in his community. And I talked to him, and he and his family had been upset about the way they'd been covered in the past by the media and were really trusting me to sort of do a better job. And I was really worried about that afterward, despite spending a lot of time on that story. So, yeah, I think we take it home for sure.
Mm-hmm. Barbara, I wanted to ask you about covering a very rural part of the state. What would you say are some of the challenges in covering places like the North Country?
If I could just pick up on something Jason said.
Oh, certainly.
Because, up here we had 22 years ago, there was the Drager incident in which an editor at the Colebrook News and Sentinel was killed. And after that incident, there was a sort of the regional press came together and said, police, law enforcement, they have these groups that get together and they talk about stuff that's specific to their job. And reporters are in the same type of business. We cover a lot of really horrible stuff. Fatal accidents, murders, drug overdose, kids with terminal disease. How as human beings do we process that? And we set up a couple of meetings. We set up actually a press association, and we actually had a meeting entitled Tears on My Notebook to talk about burnout, and the stereotypical model is the reporter goes out to the bar and throws back a few, stiff drinks and gets on with it. But that really isn't what happens. And that was very, very valuable. And we still get together occasionally for socially. And there's stuff that reporters cover that nobody else can kind of understand. And when you go to a party, everyone always looks at you like, is this on the record and off the record? You can really relax and tell those stories, and I think that was a really positive thing. And maybe it doesn't happen enough. Maybe we don't think enough about the emotional toll that stories take on reporters, especially over time. Mm-hmm. Now, back to the original question, which was covering news in a rural place. It's tough because the economy up here in northern New Hampshire is not good. We used to publish 5 days a week. We're down to 2 days. I have a very small staff, but we persist and hope the economy gets better because people do read.
Oh,
great readership. There's a need for us, but it's tough. It's very tough.
I imagine one of the challenges is that it's such a vast area. Is it difficult to go to where your sources are and talk to them?
Well, I cover basically the Androscoggin Valley, so that's not as huge as all of Coos County. We've sort of restricted, but it's just you always think that there's something that you want to cover and you can't get to because there's just not enough hours in a day. And it's just constant feeling that you can't get there, but we try to do as much as we can, and I think people are happy to have a local newspaper. They still read us up here, and we do have a presence on social media. You can read us online, and we have a Facebook page. But I think it'll be interesting to see the future as social media gets more and more popular, how that will phase in, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's not always a good thing.
Listeners, we're speaking with a panel of journalists today about the way news is gathered in the Granite State. What questions do you have for journalists about how they do their jobs? Now's the time to ask. The number is 1-800-892-6477, or you can email exchange at nhpr.org. And let's talk to Caroline in Manchester. Caroline, thank you very much for calling. What's your question or comment?
It's more of a comment. I think in this society where do-it-yourself type of attitude and that's enabled by the internet, we tend to give this credit to professionals. And I have friends who do websites or friends who write content for magazines. And it's often that they get asked, oh, can you do this little thing for me? It's not going to take you long. I'm an architect, and people will say, oh, I can do that myself. I don't need to pay for your plans. Hmm. And we tend to consider, you know, professionals as the elite, as the people we work against. But it's the same for journalists. You know, we say, oh, those journalists, I can do that myself. I can be a citizen journalist.
Huh.
But journalists have gone to school. They've learned how to interview. They've learned how to put together a story. This is something that is their profession. They're experts in that domain. And we take that away from them and turn it into something that's a negative, a point.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Well, let me put that to the panelists, Caroline. Thank you very much. The idea that somehow the professional training that journalists have is a mark against them. People seem to, according to Caroline, believe that it looks easy on the internet. Anyone can do it. So why do we need professionals?
Yeah, I think I hear that a lot, and I've heard it more now that I am involved in professional training of future journalists. The answer to that is journalism. Again, journalism is media. Not all media is journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And journalism is, at its most basic, a method of inquiry based in verification and as close as we can get to being fair. And I think I say as close as we can get because there is no such thing as unbiased objective journalism. Human beings are biased. Even when we talk about having computer algorithms write journalism stories, the human beings who wrote those computer algorithms are biased. So there will never be anything like completely unbiased journalism. But there is still a method of inquiry and professional standards. And I think most importantly, professional accountability. We can get fired if we make stuff up or steal other people's work.
Or if we get something wrong because of negligence.
Right, exactly. We can get sued. We can get fired. And I mean, anybody can get sued for libel. But there is accountability. And I feel like a lot of readers, a lot of audience members might not fully realize that.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange@nhpr.org. Jason, did you want to weigh in?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say, you know, I think in this age of Facebook, social media, reporters also have to be really careful. I mean, when there's a big breaking story, that just what you see on Facebook, the comments, it really gets crazy. And it's reporters could easily, fall into that trap of, pulling, information, thinking, well, maybe this is accurate, and it's not. And so you really have to be doing your job and verifying and making sure that you're getting accurate information, because it really gets wild out there. And when there's a big story happening, and I've really have learned to be very careful when it comes to comments on social media, because oftentimes they're inaccurate.
Right. And at the same time, you still want to take a look at those comments and pay attention to the social media narrative, because you need to be really aware of what stories your newsroom might be missing. Journalism as a profession remains incredibly homogenous. It is overwhelmingly white, male, and urban. And that means that sometimes we don't know what we don't know. And I think the upside of social media is that it has the potential to make us more accurate and to maybe help us better cover all segments of society and find voices that we might be missing and fully include them in the narrative. But it's really hard because of everything that Jason just brought up.
Let's talk to Wayne, who's calling from Dover. Wayne, thank you very much for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for the show today. I had a question for your guests. Where do they see the future for local news coverage, especially in print? I'm especially concerned with, it seems like local newspapers aren't locally owned anymore. And then to piggyback on that, a question for the professor. Where do journalism students see themselves going? To write for newspapers, to write online, or do they see something else happening in the profession?
So maybe we'll start with you, Meg.
Okay. That's a really great question. So I think my students imagine themselves somewhere where their stories will make a difference. And beyond that, they are far more open than I was at their age in terms of type of organization, the platform on which they will be producing journalism. When I was taking journalism classes, people tended to be tracked into either print or broadcast or visual. And now we take a much more holistic approach to educating journalists. And we often say that we are preparing them for jobs that don't exist yet, because we honestly don't know what tools they will be using to do their jobs in 5 years or 10 years. So in many ways, journalism education has really gone back to the basics that I was talking about before: verification, fairness, an awareness that we don't know what we don't know sometimes, and we need to take every step possible to be inclusive in our storytelling, and just a really good handle on the contours of the digital world, its origins, where it may be going, and an understanding that our students might be getting hired to be the resident expert on social media or data visualization or algorithms in a rural newsroom somewhere. And when I'm coaching students, I don't care where they go. I just want them to have a good editor, a good mentor. And that is often what matters the most at their first job. And I think from my perspective, that's one of the most frustrating things about the loss of so many great local news organizations, mostly newspapers. I have a list of awesome editors that I want people to go work for. Dan Barrick, your news director, is one of them. He and I got hired at the Concord Monitor at the same time. Mm-hmm. And nothing makes me happier when I can tell a student to send his or her resume this way. So yeah, I think that's where we're at.
And one part of Wayne's question that I want to direct to Barbara Tetra of the Berlin Daily Sun about newspapers and ownership. Barbara, I don't know if Berlin Daily Sun is independently owned or if there's an out-of-state owner, and to what extent that matters when it comes to the coverage. Barbara, what do you think?
I think it matters a lot. My owner is Mark Garang, and he grew up in Berlin, lives in North Conway. He also is part of the partnership that owns the Laconia Daily Sun, the Conway Daily Sun, and the Portland Phoenix. And he has a real care about journalism. There's other papers that are owned by chains that it seems like the bottom line is the concern. I guess you don't probably get it by a newspaper today to make a lot of money, particularly small newspapers, but there is a need for someone. I mean, I go to a lot of meetings, and I'm the only person there outside of the people on the body. And when you talk about social media, you have to want to go to this stuff and look the stuff up and dig, not just the sexy stories, but the stories, the budget stories that people need to know for their taxes. And so I think there's always a need. I'm not sure if over time it's going to evolve more into all online because the print costs are so expensive. I think but I do appreciate that I have a local owner who cares about the community. We are probably one of the rare newspapers. Some years ago, we bought a building in downtown Berlin. We own a building in the downtown where we work. So we're proud of the community, and that makes a difference. Makes a difference to the people to see that you've made a commitment to the community where you're working. You're not just there to fly around, and everybody that works at my paper lives in the area that we cover. Most of them have lived their lives here. So people see the commitment that you've made, and I think they appreciate that. It also make sure it's not a double-edged sword, that you still are objective and you don't let friendships or your care for the community be a bias in how you cover the news.
Mm-hmm.
But there are too few locally owned newspapers out there today.
Well, Barbara, we appreciate your work for the Berlin Daily Sun. Thank you very much for taking some time to speak with us today.
My pleasure.
And listeners, if you've got questions, give us a call. The number is 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange at nhpr.org. We've got a few calls in the queue. We want to take them after the break. Also, some email comments from listeners just like you. If you'd like to weigh in, if you've got a question, now's the time to ask it. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And also watch a live streaming video at our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and we are talking about how the news is made with a few folks who write it. Here with me in the studio are NHPR's Brita Green, who covers the Upper Valley and Monadnock region for NHPR, Jason Schreiber, union leader correspondent, and Meg Heckman, former Concord Monitor reporter and now an assistant professor of journalism at Northeastern University. And we've got some callers on the line with questions or comments about how the news is made. If you'd like to get in the queue, call 1-800-892-6477. Let's talk to David in Sutton. Hi, David. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. This is a comment, or I wish I could make it a question, but I'm not sure how I could make it a question.
Comments are fine.
Back in 2016, I went to a campaign event and was interviewed by a local reporter, and the whole time he tried to, or this person tried to, slant things in a negative way, and no matter what he said, I wouldn't allow him to do that. And he almost tried to lead me on, and I felt so disappointed because I knew who this journalist was. He didn't know who I was, and I respected him very much. And I thought, why is he doing this? Is he trying to get more people to read the newspaper or something? And I just wondered if your reporters there have experienced situations where their colleagues, I mean, I love reading the newspaper. I love watching the news on TV. But people complain about journalists putting a slant on things, and here was a journalist putting his slant on things.
Do you mean, like, if I could just clarify, David, you think this reporter was sort of asking you leading questions, getting you respond to stuff that you felt was irrelevant?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. In fact, he didn't even use me in the article the next day, which was fine. I thought I might, you know, have repercussions from it, but yeah, I was just disappointed that the way the questions were, he was trying to get a negative response to the experience, and I thought reporters just, you know, report on what's happening.
Well, thank you very much, David, for your comment. And let me ask Brita Green here from NHPR, because sometimes when we report as radio reporters, our questions end up in the story.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It's a nice humanizing part of some of our stories.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we run Q&As on programs like All Things Considered. Brita, when you are constructing a question, what are some principles that you try to follow?
Yeah. Well, first, let me just say, David, I'm sorry that happened to you, and I hope that you can continue to trust other reporters that you run into.
Right.
I think whenever I go into a situation, try to ask open-ended questions, try to get a sense of why people, you know, at a campaign event, for example, if that's what we're talking about, hey, why are you here? What are you interested in? What are you hoping to get out of this candidate in terms of what your personal daily life? One thing that I think we're really focused on here at NHPR is how our listeners, how the people that we're covering really feel impacted by something personally. So maybe not all the big picture, like economic policy and blah, 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 blah. But like, how do you think this is going to affect your daily life? At all costs, try to avoid someone that you're interviewing feeling like that, unfortunately.
Yeah, I will second the open-ended questions thing. And Brita, I don't know where you initially got your public radio training. Where I was initially trained, there was this great piece of advice that they encouraged me when talking to sources to create silence, to just shut my mouth after I ask a question and let the silence exist. And so the source feels the space, has enough space to open up and share their story without me getting in the way. By the nods here from Jason and Meg, this is not an exclusively a radio thing.
Right. Well, I would just echo what she was just saying, if I'm covering a campaign event, I'm just going to ask, so what did you think? Why did you come here today? Did you like what you heard? you know, what were you looking to get from this here today? So, I mean, I'm not looking to pose leading questions, and I just want to know what they thought.
Yeah.
And that's how I approach it. But.
Meg, same thing?
Same thing. And, you know, sometimes reporters do go to an event or do a set of interviews with a very specific focus. And a focus is different from a slant. I mean, we always try and get beyond this campaign event happened. You know, we try and find some meaning. We try and maybe convey a little information about the candidate or some context. And if I'm asking a question that I think that a source or a person might find odd, I try and tell them about that. Like, hey, I'm working on a piece about X, and kind of get them in the loop so they understand what's going on to avoid any type of misperceptions.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I've heard been instructed is that your sources shouldn't really be surprised about what you're writing about.
Like,
they should, if they see their name quoted, they should know what they're sort of being quoted for.
And I'll often tell my students to err on the side of transparency. And certainly you want to stay independent. It's still your news organization's story, but no surprises.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk to Clark in Sanborn. Clark, thank you very much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Good morning, Peter. Thank you. And great to thank you for having this the show today. This is so important. I'm a recovering journalist. And from the radio side is where I started in Keene, New Hampshire, covering, as Barbara said, and your panels have said, covering those school board meetings, the city council meetings. And I guess journalism is just so important in terms of creating a sense of place. You know, the whole notion of civic capital, particularly in a state like New Hampshire, where we do have a participatory, decentralized form of government, it's important to know what's happening at town hall. I appreciate all the hard work that's done. I particularly, being a radio guy, the decline in local radio news, which New Hampshire Public Radio provides such a important role in connecting our community from Pittsburgh to Plastow. So keep on the great work. Know that it's appreciated and it's important work.
Well, Clark, hey, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. We've got this email from Barbara in Goffstown who wrote in, and she says, I know reporters do their best to be independent and report facts, cover the story as it happens, but on more than one occasion, I have been at an event, read the news story the next day, and wonder if we were in the same place. And she describes a statehouse hearing that the long and short of it is that it's an example of, wow, were we really in the same place? Do you get complaints about this often, or is this something that you hear that you're just not lining up with readers' perceptions of an event, or is this sort of an outlier?
I mean, I have not really experienced that. I mean, I think it just depends on the reporter and maybe their experience. I don't know, but it hasn't really been something that I've encountered.
Let's look forward a little bit because we're coming up to the end of the show, and I'll ask you where do you see the practice of journalism going? How is it going to change? Well, Meg, maybe you have your finger on the pulse of the future more than anybody else because you have students who represent the future of the profession. What do you think? Where's it going?
I think there's a lot to be worried about in terms of the business model that supports journalism, particularly at the local level, and the climate in which journalists are working. I worry deeply about the physical safety of my students, the financial security of my students, and the culture and the climate into which they are going. And I am still incredibly hopeful because they are bright and they are ambitious and they're grounded in this idea that journalism really can make the world a better place. So I don't have answers, but I do still have hope.
Mm-hmm. So Brita, Meg is worried but hopeful. How about you?
I'm hopeful. Period. No. no. One thing I wanted to talk about was audio. I think audio is a really interesting sort of sector of when we talk about local news. One of the callers earlier was sort of distinguishing particularly on the print side, like, hey, what's happening with print? But I think if you look at what's happening here in New Hampshire, I think NHPR, we now have the biggest newsroom in the state. We are primarily a radio station here, but right now we're on video, we're streaming online, and our content is also on our website. That's a print publication, sort of at its heart. So that's fascinating. And radio is really working. I think also if you look at something like The Daily, which is the New York Times podcast, mm-hmm. which has been super popular and opened up a whole new audience for a print publication, that's sort of an area of big hope for me.
And hope for you, Jason, as well.
I'm hopeful. I don't know what the future is of print journalism, but you know, we're still going to need reporters out there doing the job, no matter what happens. And I hope I'm part of that. And I'm hopeful.
Well, thank you, Jason, and thanks to you, Meg Heckman and Brita Green, for being part of this conversation this morning. Really important. Want to thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Listeners, remember, the conversation does continue online on Facebook and at nhpr.org. Again, this was NHPR's Brita Green, the union leaders Jason Schreiber and Meg Heckman, professor of journalism at Northeastern University. Also, thanks to Hadley Barndollar of Seacoast Online and Barbara Tatro of the Berlin Daily Sun for joining us earlier in the program. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and our intern is Abby Sleeper. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening, and have a great weekend.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.